You know, it's a whole lot easier for us to see the speck in someone else's eye than the beam in our own eye. But we're going to go after the beam today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We said the first rally, we didn't trust the local grand jury. That's why we wanted the federal grand jury. That's why we still are going to fight for it. And we're not going to stop marching and protesting until we do.
Those comments from Reverend Al Sharpton are some of the comments that I find to be terribly unhelpful, provocatory. And rather than saying we want justice, he is saying we want the verdict that we want. But we're going to talk today candidly and honestly. Once again, Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. Yes, for years now, I have been taking risks on the air, not by just coming down on one side of an issue or another, just with the conservative talking points, whatever they may be. No, I'm ready to tackle controversies and wade into difficult situations where there's the real possibility of everybody getting upset with me because I'm not going to please any one person. But I am in pursuit of truth, regardless of cost or consequence. And I believe that's why many of you listen to the broadcast. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I want to say plainly, I welcome those who differ with me. I welcome those who want to challenge facts that I bring, or you may say alleged facts. I want to freely invite you to expose blind spots in my life. At the same time, I'm going to do my best to do that with each of you. As I challenge myself constantly and look for blind spots and look for areas where I am missing it, I want to do the same with each of you. And yes, we will use the Ferguson issue, which continues to be front and center news in America. We will use that as our springboard for discussion. Again, 866-348-7884. Let me put out a few basic thoughts for you. Number one, I spent a lot of time really meditating on the race issues in America. From my own perspective and listening to this perspective of others, I reflected, I thought, I prayed, I read, I listened some more. And I came up with two very simple statements. They're ridiculously simple in light of the amount of thought that I gave to this, but they were these: that white Americans often have the blind spot of not seeing racism when it is there. And that was largely accepted by many whites that I interacted with, except some who told me it wasn't true because the racism wasn't there. Then my second thesis was this, that many black Americans, their blind spot is they see racism when it isn't there. Again, we're talking about blind spots. We're talking about the specks that we see in others, but we don't see the beams in our own eyes, to use the image of Jesus from Matthew 7, which makes our judgment biased. Now, I had large number of black listeners and others I interacted with say, yeah, you're right on that. But I said, no, we see the racism because it is there. In other words, each side defending that their blind spot wasn't really there, which, of course, is the nature of a blind spot. Now, I want to say something very, very plainly. I was doing more research, just looking at stats. And as far as I'm concerned, the protests, what's happening in Ferguson and around the country, they are a distraction from the much, much deeper issues of the terrible racial disparity that exists. And if we get distracted from the bigger issues, and we cannot look holistically as Americans, and in particular as followers of Jesus, how to work together to help the situation of many black and minority families in America, to put our heads together constructively, we will miss the whole larger point. We're going to talk candidly and provoke some things today in the interest of truth.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We lost the round, but the fight ain't over. And you don't judge the fight on one round. Even if we get knocked down, we get up and go to the corner and come out fighting the next round. You won the first round, Mr. Prosecutor, but don't cut your gloves off, because the fight's not over. Justice will come to Ferguson.
That is destructive. There is no other word for that than destructive and divisive. I could care less who it is making the comments, what the color of their skin was, whether they're called reverend or not. Comments like that are destructive. When you go into a very emotional situation on top of it, and then you incite people with those words, when if you want justice, that doesn't mean you only accept justice as your particular verdict. It doesn't mean that you accept, quote, justice when it goes your way. Missouri Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder told Fox News in relationship to Reverend Sharpton, it sure sounds that way to a lot of folks in terms of provoking things. He said, I cannot imagine, here's the quote, sorry, I cannot imagine any previous president of either party welcoming an insider of mobs like Reverend Sharpton into the White House, into his inner councils for sober advice. Now, I decided to do a little poll yesterday on Ask Dr. Brown on my Facebook page. That's A-S-K-D-R Brown on my Facebook page. We've got about 75,000 Facebook fans there. And I asked this simple question. Can you help me with a little poll I'm doing as a follow-up to my radio show today? Please let me know if, based on your analysis of the evidence presented, you agree with the grand jury decision not to charge Officer Wilson in the shooting of my namesake, Michael Brown. In other words, do you feel the investigation was fair and the jurors made the right decision? Please also let me know if you're American or from another country, if you're male or female, and if you're black, white, Hispanic, Asian, or other. If you want to write a full explanation of your views, please state them concisely first to make things easier. Thanks so much. Then I said, for those who don't understand why I'm asking the question in this way, it's to see to what degree different sectors of society see the same evidence differently. Now, I have said numerous times that to my white friends that there is a reason that black Americans are much more suspicious of the police and the legal system. And they have important reasons for that. And many of you callers have reiterated that over and over and over again. Mistreatment, beatings for no reason, getting singled out because you're black, on and on. There is a very real issue of police brutality in America. There is a very real issue of flaws in our justice system that we must address. My black friends are not making that up. And it's important that white America recognizes that. By the way, for callers, friends, this is not a show that is devoted to one or two callers and they get 20 minutes or 10 minutes and everybody else gets no time. I get to as many callers as possible. And if I can give you 2 or 3 minutes or 4 minutes, sometimes if we're interacting in depth, that's a lot of time, because that also means I'm going to be able to get to a lot less other callers. So don't be offended if we don't devote a whole show to your call, or if we tell you can't call for a couple weeks. That's everybody. That's everybody. All right? Boy, just had to explain that. In any case. So I put the question out on Facebook. And got, oh, so far it looks like 600 something comments in response. Just trying to get to that page again on my screen. Here we go. And I would say that the vast majority of those responding felt, based on the evidence and as they reviewed it and read eyewitness testimonies, that the grand jury got it right. Now, bear in mind, even though I've said the fact that you've got only three blacks on the jury is going to give the impression that it's not going to be fair. But the grand jury, those numbers, they're set in advance. Those people are set aside in advance, and then they hear different cases. It's not a matter of this was specially gathered just for this situation, as far as I understand the process. In any case, there were more black Americans who questioned the verdict than white Americans. But still, there were many black Americans who didn't question. I've had black Americans tell me, listen, we could see the evidence in front of our eyes, and if it didn't go the way we wanted it, we wouldn't accept it. Now, I'm willing, as a white American, to recognize my blind spots. I'm willing to. I'm looking at it constantly. And thank God for the wonderful woman I'm married to, that she'll help tell me my blind spots on a daily basis if need be. Okay? And I'm self-critical before God, and I ask deep questions before God, and I read other opinions to challenge my own views all the time. And I listen and I learn from you, my listeners. My problem is sometimes that it seems that those I differ with don't want to see blind spots in their own lives. Here's a note on my Facebook page. Grand jury got it right, by the way, African-American male here. And then he wrote this. His name was Derek, and he said this, and let me just go to another page where I copied that out. He said, while I lament the death of another black man in this country, I also lament the hundreds of black men killed by other black men killed in this country, the thousands of black babies killed for profit at the abortionist's hands, the thousands of black children being raised without a father, and the thousands of black men in jail. It is no coincidence that the black family started deteriorating in the 60s. The same decade that removed the Bible and prayer was removed from the public schools, replacing God with government never ends well. What the black community needs is not more government assistance. What the black community needs is Jesus. Now, this is a black man saying that. When Herman Cain, a couple years back when he was running for president, black American business leader Herman Cain, he said that many African Americans have been brainwashed into not being open-minded or even considering, quote, a conservative point of view. He was criticized by Democratic strategist Cornell Belcher on the Anderson Cooper show and said that he was criticized for being racist. So here is a black American leader saying that that many in his own community had been brainwashed to not even consider a conservative point of view. So here you even have a situation where, say, I, as a white American, couldn't say something negative about white Americans, or a black American couldn't say anything about black Americans without that being considered racist. I mean, that makes no sense at all. If someone on the inside can't say something, then what in the world can we say? There was a caller very upset with me. In fact, we ultimately had to cut her off because she would not engage in a conversation. But she said that more blacks are killed by whites every year. I said, well, that's not true. Just looking at stats a few years back online, can't verify all of this, but it said more than 1,600 whites are murdered by blacks each year. Blacks murder whites at 18 times the rate whites murder blacks. But now you might say, yeah, but whites have blacks in this bad situation. Let's just look at everything honestly. That's my point. The more I look at things, the more I am convinced that together, as Americans, we have to work to try to restore and strengthen black families in America. Whoever's at fault, to whatever degree white history is at fault, to whatever degree the government is at fault, whoever is at fault, wherever the guilt lies, or if it's something we all have to take together, we need to face a very massive, difficult, painful problem. We have to. And I am more burdened by it. The more I look at it, the fatherlessness, the other issues. Look, gangs are helping nobody. We have to try to address that together. More police presence alone, that's not the issue. More government assistance alone, that's not the issue. More blaming is not the issue. But this is a big problem, and we've got to face it together constructively, and the church must lead the way. Before I go to your calls, I want to take play one more clip for you. This is black radio host Jesse Lee Peterson, clip number 5.
I've been saying for years that white Americans need to get over the fear of being called racist and this false guilt about what's wrong with black people, or that most blacks are suffering not because of racism from white folks, but the lack of moral character. and that black people have been encouraged to hate whites and discriminate against them from the so-called civil rights leaders and others, and that this is evil, and evil get worse from generation to generation if you don't deal with it. It's out of control.
All right, so that was Jesse Lee Peterson, a black man, saying that whites are afraid to address issues for fear of sounding racist. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk totally candid and straight to each other, all right? And you're going to tell me plainly if you think I've got blind spots. I'm going to tell you plainly if I think you've got blind spots, so that we can help each other. Is that a deal? Is that fair? 866-34-TRUTH. We're not going to worry about offending each other. We're going to speak the truth in love. Deal? We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you as we do our best to expose blind spots in one another's lives, as we do our best to speak the truth in love, remembering that we can't take the speck out of someone else's eye until we take the beam out of our own eyes. 866-348-7884. Two quick things then to your calls. A gentleman called me yesterday and said, look, I don't believe these witnesses who say that Michael Brown, my namesake, was charging Officer Wilson. I don't believe them because what you can do is, you know, you live in the hood. You've got most of the guys there. They got some criminal record somewhere. You know, the cop can say, listen, I'll take this charge off if you'll testify this and that. In other words, there's that much mistrust in the system. Well, are you telling me that there's no pressure in a situation like that to give a testimony that indicts the officer? That there's no community pressure that would say that if you testify in a way that verifies that the officer's life was potentially in danger, you're telling me that there's no community pressure, that someone couldn't get in trouble if it was known they testified in that particular way? I mean, isn't that extraordinarily one-sided in terms of seeing things? And are you telling me that nine non-blacks could not vote fairly or judge fairly when presented with evidence? If there's systemic racism on one side, is there no systemic racism on another side? I mean, this is the conversation we need to have if we're going to move forward. I wrote an article after the George Zimmerman acquittal called The George Zimmerman Trial in Black and White. Read it. If you're a white person, read it and see if I got the general white side correct to stereotype. And if you're a black person, read it to see if I represented your side in a broad sense. Again, we're stereotyping as if every black person, every white person sees things the same way, or every Hispanic, every Asian. But read what I wrote and see if I laid things out both ways. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll start in Boston with Bob. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks
doing
for
very well.
I appreciate it.
You bet.
You know, I think it certainly, I mean, the point to me regarding the importance of, like, just being candid in conversations like this is just absolutely imperative to any type of progress. And another thing you said, it really rang true with me in terms of, you know, just saying that we're all Americans. And you know, one of the things that is just become blatantly obvious to me throughout this entire thing is just the emphasis that we place on the differences that we have with each other, as opposed to the commonalities, which a lot more than I think we give credit to. And I think, you know, one of the things that's interesting is how much race has been brought up in this entire series of events. And to me, I don't see it as much as a race thing as I do a culture issue with the American culture, for one, but really a moral hierarchy issue that is predominant in many communities. And I think it's not specific to a race. I think it's more so an ideology that focuses on materialistic types of ventures and things that are not altruistic I think ultimately, regardless of what race you are, you end up by suffering for that. And then, you know, in just one more quick note on the race topic, I think it goes both ways on the other side too. I hear a lot of, and I'm a white person, and I hear a lot of my white friends talk about that, you know, they should be, you know, and speaking of black people, saying things like, you know, they should be over slavery or the oppression that they had faced. It's been a long time to get over it. And my thought is always, you know, what uniquely qualifies any person, white or black, to decide how long such a unique and overt discrimination would take to unravel itself?
Yeah,
absolutely. I appreciate you taking my call. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Bob. Let me say this. I do have black Christian friends who say the same thing, like, hey, this is the past, we have to get over it. But I've listened more in recent years on these issues. And even just a helpful graphic that someone wrote up for me and said, look at all the generations of us being mistreated. Look how recent it is. Look how recent it is that that things have changed, and even some parts of the country they're still not fully changed. So I agree. This is not just something you snap your fingers and walk away from when there's been a history that's been this unfair that long. But as I've said many times, if all we'll do is pass the buck or blame others rather than say, okay, with God's help and us working hard in our families, here, somehow we have to work together to help and support and strengthen black families in America. Now, plenty of families say we don't need anybody's help. I understand. But whatever we can do to strengthen the family, because that's the nucleus of everything. That is the nucleus of everything. And as God's people, setting examples. I have friends of mine who are black pastors, and they put tremendous emphasis on family. And when I go to their churches, I see couples with babies. I see as many men as I see women. And obviously, this is the way that everything turns around. Whatever we can do as a society to help that, and as a church to help that, I believe that'll help solve lots of problems. And I believe that many black families have two strikes against them from the start because of our history and because of the wrong ways that government has sought to help. I've got articles in front of me blaming a lot of the current deterioration in the family, much worse than before the civil rights movement, to Lyndon Johnson and a lot of his policies and what it contributed to in a certain welfare state. These are conversations to have. 866-34-TRUTH. By the way, please be sure to go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Check out the resource offer. It's a wonderful resource, the Tree of Life Messianic Version of the Bible, the lowest price we've ever had it for, to get to as many people as we can, especially for the holidays. So go to the website, AskDrBrown.org. When you have a moment, you can watch a video that will tell you more. And again, I'm going to be taking calls the next hour and a half. Whatever you miss of the broadcast, you can catch on the website, AskDrBrown.org. Just click on Listen Live, and you'll be able to do that. Let's go to Rich in New Jersey. How do you pronounce where you are, sir?
Scotch Plains, New Jersey.
Okay, got it. All right, it was just typed wrong for me. Yes, sir. What's your thought?
Well, I agree with you, Michael, that Al Sharpton is, with his full social gospel, is creating a lot of conflict and violence. And I wonder why there isn't more preachers, black and white alike, who are preaching the word and not falling into a social solution. There is no social solution in a world where it just creates conflict. You have opposite sides fighting for social causes. Whether it's black people or gay people or women's rights, it just creates conflict. The solution is internal. That's what Christians believe. You must be born again.
Yeah, you know, let me say this, Rich. When we are born again, of course, we'll live differently socially. But there are plenty of wonderful black pastors, leaders, white pastors, leaders who are speaking. They just don't get the attention that the rabble-rousers get.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
In the coming days, I will announce updated Justice Department guidance regarding profiling by federal law enforcement.
Okay, question for you. On average, are more policemen killed in the line of duty, whatever their ethnicity, color of skin, by whomever they're killed, on average, in a year, are more policemen killed in the line of duty, or are more blacks killed by policemen during a year, whether in self-defense or whether invalidly? According to everything I've read, the most accurate statistics would say that more policemen are killed than blacks killed by policemen. You say, what's the point of that? The point of that is to bring every issue into focus. 866-34-TRUTH. Is there police brutality? And that was the voice of Eric Holder that we just heard, Attorney General Eric Holder, explaining how they're going to look into issues surrounding racial profiling more. I'll come back to his comments about some of the protests. But here's the point. If you want to say racial profiling is a problem, which I believe it is. No, I've never experienced it, but many of you have. And I believe your stories, and I believe the stories of those that I've read. And police are not perfect, so I understand. There's going to be overreaction. There's going to be sin. There's going to be corruption. There's going to be brutality. We must do our best to address that together. The looting, the protesting this wrong case, as I said yesterday, find a better case to protest and then protest rightly. All right? So if we want to draw attention to police brutality where it exists and racial profiling where it exists, then let's understand what the police are also dealing with. Let's understand how many of them have lost their lives. Let's understand why they are racially profiling. Okay? And let's try to fix the bigger problems together. And if the only way we know how to fix them is get on our faces and pray and ask God for help, then that's where we start. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm talking about finding blind spots on both sides. Let's go to... All right. We won't go there. Let's go to the Bronx, New York. Ray, welcome to the Line of Fire. Thank you so much for calling.
My pleasure, Dr. Brown. I just want to say that you are a hero for standing for truth. I support you 1,000%. We can go on talking for hours about this issue. You're just touching the surface. And once again, you are 100% correct in all your points of view. God bless you.
Well, thank you, sir. Ray, what's your own ethnicity or background?
Yeah, I'm Hispanic, of a dark complexion as well, and I have no problems with law enforcement. They are there to protect us.
Got it. Hey, I appreciate that, especially calling from the Bronx, New York, as a Hispanic man. Thank you. 866-34-TRUTH. Now, let me just say this one quick thing. I've got a short break coming up, so I'm not going to take calls until after the break, because otherwise you don't have a few seconds. I don't want to cut you off. So we'll come back. We've got some nice extended segments, and I want to get to as many of your calls as possible. But let me say this. I have gotten called insensitive yesterday by a faithful listener, a dear brother, one of the most gracious men who ever calls into the broadcast. I mean, he's called enough over the years that I remember him. He told me that I could sound insensitive. And then I had someone else, and these are both African-Americans, tweet me a note at the same time I just spotted it today saying, you're absolutely not insensitive. What you're saying needs to be said. I understand with everyone listening, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, young, old, that we're going to have many different perspectives. None of us are monolithic in our communities, but we're going to keep listening to each other. We'll be right back.
The Line. Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. Thanks for joining me in difficult conversations. Listen, what you normally do is you're known as a host on the radio or a newscaster with one view or another. And you've got the people are going to listen to, say, MSNBC, and the people are going to listen to or watch MSNBC, and the people are going to watch Fox, or the people that are going to listen to Rush Limbaugh, or the people who are going to listen to Alan Colmes. So you have the disparity, whereas we'll touch on, and look, there are plenty of things where you know where I'm going to come down the line. To me, the issues are, part of the term here, black and white. I mean, they're as clear as day. And there's no disputing it. There are other issues where there's so many nuances and difficulties and different ways of understanding things that I may offend everybody. I may offend nobody. But my goal is not to offend. My goal is to be truthful. 866-34-TRUTH. You say, well, Mike, as a white American, what was your opinion on the Darren Wilson, Michael Brown situation before it went to trial? My opinion was we didn't know. My opinion was we really didn't know. If I had to say likelihood, well, when I learned that the officer had never used his gun once in 5 or 6 years, then he didn't seem to be trigger happy. And the incriminating evidence of the robbery early on could make one think that there could have been some type of hostile encounter. But I didn't know. You say now after the grand jury verdict, well, I respect the verdict and I assume it's right, but I still don't know. Now, if you say, well, I know, then that could be because of a certain bias. I know for a fact. How do you know for a fact when you weren't there? How do you know which witnesses were lying and which witnesses were telling the truth? How do you know that evidence was tampered with or not tampered with? You know, I read stuff too. So to this moment, I don't know. And when Al Sharpton and others say we're going to get justice, that means we're going to get the verdict we want. That's not justice, because Al Sharpton doesn't know. 866-34-TRUTH. So we're going on this journey together. Thank you for being part of it. But again, I give you absolute permission to speak freely to me, as long as you can do it in a way that's appropriate for public radio. And I'll do the same with you. Fair enough? So we go to Columbia, Maryland. Deja, thank you so much for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Okay, so as far as this subject goes, I've been back and forth. I've been back and forth with friends, family. It's a very muddled situation. At first, I was the same as you. I didn't know. And I found myself being innately upset because of Mike Brown. I'm an African-American 21-year-old. I come from suburban America. Most of my friends are Caucasian and or Asian. And I still have that feeling of, okay, someone's wronged me when I see this. And I know that, I know that side. The other side I know is the side that my friends are indifferent. You know, they're like, well, we really don't know. We have no idea what's going on. And they immediately latch on to whatever, you know, the officer, he had the right to do this because of this, that, and the third. And there's no real digging. And my issue is, if you really want to be equal in this, if you really want to kind of cover that line and have everyone look at it in a holistic type of way, you have to get past the shallow surface.
Yep.
Everybody needs to be looking at details. Everybody needs to be digging for the truth. When something like this happens, the black community is in uproar, and they don't know if Mike Brown was a criminal. They don't know if he actually did something to deserve this. And my other friends, the other side, is completely indifferent. They don't want to do anything about it. So I'm, you know, now facts have surfaced that make it seem a little bit more suspicious than I immediately thought. I really don't think that what happened is fair. But as far as the justice system goes, you're innocent until proven guilty. So there really was no evidence to prove him guilty.
Let me say this. I appreciate you reflecting on it and asking these questions. I'll even ask myself questions if I hear of a crime, if I hear of a plane crash. Do I react the same if it was an American plane or a foreign plane? Do I react the same if I hear a victim of a crime was a male or a female or a person of color, not a person of I constantly ask myself questions to see what my attitudes are. If I hear a bad report about someone I don't like, do I believe it? If I hear a bad report about someone I do like, do I not believe it? But I think the two things are, one, it's right to question why you have an immediate gut reaction of injustice being done when really we don't know the facts, and it could just as well have been a case where a cop lost his life. It could have been turned around. On the flip side, the indifference of your friends indicates that they don't understand why so many Black Americans are upset. I'm not talking about the arsonists and the looters. That's just, you know, that could be any color, any people. That's another thing. But why is this such an open wound? Why does it cause such pain? Why is there such mistrust? Again, I don't believe that the mistrust is as merited as many Black Americans would think, but it is actually merited to a certain degree, and white Americans need to understand why. Again, as someone who's never been racially profiled, I have learned about this by listening to those who have been. So the indifference would concern me because this is a big, painful issue, and we've got to tackle it together. What I'm trying to be is be proactive. Thank you for the call. I'm trying to be proactive, and I'm trying to be productive by saying, let's address this in a way where we can move forward. Let's try to understand what the real issues are. And if we can get past the micro view and look at the macro, look at the big picture, then we can be productive together. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Monroe, New York. Carlos, welcome to the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Dr. Brown? God bless you. I'm just calling because people have to understand that Michael Brown was committing a crime, plain and simple. If it was a white man committing a crime, there would have been an uproar. But he committed a crime, he assaulted the officer, and as an officer, you have to defend yourself. Now, when you're in training, they train you to stop the threat and use force to match force. And the officer felt that his life was in danger, so he used the force that he felt appropriate to that particular situation. Now, could have he done it a different way? Yes, but we don't know his mindset. We don't know what was going through his head. We don't know what happened prior to him shooting the kid. But people have to understand the kid was not doing anything of this. He committed a crime, assaulted the clerk, and then assaulted the officer. Plain and simple. Now, to me, this is my opinion. I believe that Al Sharpton is just a troublemaker. He doesn't represent the truth as a quote-unquote reverend, as he calls himself. And he has to realize that sometimes you have to sit back and look at the bigger picture and see what's actually going on. You cannot just jump to conclusion and, oh, it's a black and white thing. Sometimes it's not a black and white thing. Sometimes it's, I'm in fear of my life, and I have to stop the threat, and I'm going to stop
it. Yeah, look, there are instances of whites being killed by black officers. We don't assume it's a black and white issue. Let me say this, okay? And thank you for the call, Carlos. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me say this. Whether Officer Wilson was justified in shooting my namesake, Michael Brown, whether he was or not, God knows. God knows. But I do not believe for a split second that here was a white man saying, I want to take out a black man. I don't believe that for a split second. Otherwise, there would have been a whole lot more casualties over the years. I don't believe that. And to me, that is a terribly biased thought. Even to think the thought is a biased thought. Now, to say, well, based on my reading of the evidence, I dispute this and that, fair enough. Let's just get one more clip in, then we'll go right back to the phones. Clip number four, this is Paul Callan, CNN legal correspondent, speaking about the grand jury.
This was not a trial. This was an investigation. In the end, there's so much reasonable doubt here. What would we be accomplished if we indicted in this case? There would be an acquittal. The suffering would go on with people worrying about the case for months. I mean, does anybody seriously think that with seven witnesses saying that he charged the car, four witnesses saying he was reaching into his waistband, and everybody agreeing that Michael Brown had just done a strong-arm robbery of a store, does anybody think that there is not reasonable doubt in this case? There would never be a conviction.
That's why I said yesterday that those who want to draw attention to police brutality, those who want to draw attention to injustice, need to find a different case. This is the wrong one to use. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So remember the deal today. Remember the deal. You are absolutely free. Well, as always holds, but you are absolutely free to challenge me if you feel there's a blind spot. I had people challenging me yesterday and telling me that I missed this and misreported this and was wrong on this. In each case, they were wrong. Each factual case. Now, someone says, well, you sound this, or you sound insensitive, or, oh, that's a matter of opinion, and I'm glad to hear from people in that regard. But each alleged factual thing I was guilty of, turns out the opposite was true, because I'm doing my utmost to listen carefully and to see where there are different points of view and to understand why we have the disparity. Look, if we both watch the same sunrise or sunset, and I said, that was beautiful. And you said, that's the dullest thing I've ever seen. Well, I'd want to know why we saw the same thing so differently. I'd be curious about that, especially if we were close. When we have different parts of the nation reacting very differently to the same thing, we need to have a conversation to find out why. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Smith in New York City. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, good afternoon, Dr. Brown. Thank you so much for taking my call. I do appreciate you having this open forum for your listeners.
Thank you.
What I wanted to say is that as a highly educated African-American male that has and that continues to live on both ends of the spectrum, I live in a highly affluent area, went to the best of schools, worked in corporate America, and I would have to say I wear a suit from 9 to 5. When I come home in my neighborhood and put on jeans and a sweatshirt and go to the local store, now I'm assumed to be a criminal. I've been stopped and frisked several times by the police, even to the point of in my car. And so my point is that I see both sides of the spectrum here. And I don't think that African Americans are upset based on a Michael Brown case. I think it's a collective of
yep.
issues. It's a whole thing how the media continues to demonize Black men or African-American men. Every day on the news, in the media, you see case after case after case. And then all of a sudden, you get the bang or the climax of the situation where you have a African-American male who is accidentally killed, such as the young Black man who was killed in the project, coming down the stairs. He had no gun. The man that was killed in Staten Island, the Trayvon Martin case, the Michael Brown case, case after case after case. And this has happened ever since the civil rights era. Black people have had to fight for every single thing that they have. And so it continues to happen over and over. The poverty that's in the neighborhood, the inequality. And for myself, I go to work. I'm the only African-American male most often in corporate America, no matter what situation I go in. So, you know, I have to go and carry that burden on my back.
Yeah.
Everyone's looking at me. And then I have to come home, and now I'm assumed to be a criminal where I pay taxes out of the wazoo.
Yep.
So,
yeah, and Smith, yeah, let me just jump in. And first, I really appreciate you sharing this. It's callers just like you who constantly bring these issues to our attention. Obviously, when you have the gangster rap type image that the media is not just pushing forth, pop culture is pushing forth, that hurts people like you across the country. But we need to realize the hardships you have to deal with. the obstacles. That's part of the thing I'm trying to bring to attention. So a quick comment and a question for you. The comment is, because the Ferguson shooting is so terribly divisive, because of the video evidence that we have, because of the burn this place down and all of that, it is not going to advance the cause. That's what, take the kid in the project. Take one of these other cases. Let's draw attention to it. I know it does. Look, there are people who rallied around to make the Ferguson thing happen. If not for the Al Sharptons and others, it would not have gotten as much attention. So let's rally around a more obviously righteous case where someone is completely innocent and there's no dispute about it. But here's the bigger question for you, sir. The deterioration in the family, the fact that so much illegitimacy and abortion and so on, I look at this as a demonic attack on Black America. That's how I look at it. And whatever white complicity it is in the past, hopefully we've repented of that and recognized that. But how do we address the larger issues together? In other words, it's not just kids are not being born out of wedlock because of police brutality. And you don't have these other issues because of injustice, in the court system. How do we address the larger problem? That's what my heart grieves over.
Well, I think, you're absolutely right. The way that we address the larger problem is people need to understand that every situation is unique. Just like you as a Jewish American, the things that may harbor your community or the things that your community may deal with, I can't walk in your shoes like you can't walk in mine.
Yeah.
And so for people that are on the outside make comments and, that they have no idea of those comments. They have no idea of the hardship of that person that they're talking about or they're trying to criminalize or demonize. I think that we have to come together and realize that it's bigger than that. Like you said earlier, it is a demonic attack on the African-American community. It's a demonic attack on humanity overall because we're all in this boat together. But still,
yeah.
Everyone has their unique thing that they're dealing with. And right now, I really believe that this is something that has been holding its grip on the African-American community big time. And I think the churches have to stand up and go out to the community and realize that we have to come together. It has to be fought, as Ephesians 6:10 says, spiritual wickedness in high places. It's not flesh and blood that we're fighting here. So people need to realize that and stop using the race as, as the way of making an argument. Even though we can't get around stuff that's obvious, we see race, that's the obvious thing, but it's bigger than that. And I think what's happened is Christianity has kind of fell in the background, and that's the thing that needs to come back to the forefront so we can fight the demonization that's really going on overall on humanity.
Got it. Hey, Smith, I appreciate the call so much, and thanks for listening as well. God bless you.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Brown. God bless you.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Look, I'm looking at the clock. There is a minute left. You say, why I'm giving out the number? Because I've got another hour to go. So a bunch of you have been holding. I'm going to get your calls as soon as I can. Right into the next hour, right? So if you can just hold a little bit longer, I will put you up first before our next set of callers for the second hour. And can I encourage you, if you're in total agreement with me but can't see another side, can I encourage you to step back and listen to those that have a different point of view? Can I encourage those of you who profoundly differ with me to step back and ask yourself why? Again, especially when, look, I'm not trying to dance down the middle of the road here to avoid offending people. In fact, I risk offending everybody. But my goal is we've got to take this moment to come together as a body and to listen to each other so we can move forward and really try to get God's mind on how do we address the massive problems and issues and the attack on Black America. That's my point. That's my goal. If you stand with us, if you believe in what we're doing, a year-end gift would be a tremendous blessing to us, would help us, hey, amplify my voice to speak to more and more and more people. Would you do that? Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on Donate to stand with us. My deep appreciation for your help. My bottom line today, if we're going to speak the truth without risk of cost or consequence, there's always the possibility of offending people. But I'd rather offend people than offend the Lord. You know, it's a whole lot easier for us to see the speck in someone else's eye than the beam in our own eye. We're going to go after the beam today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We lost the round. But the fight ain't over. And you don't judge the fight on one round. Even if we get knocked down, we get up and go to the corner and come out fighting the next round. You won the first round, Mr. Prosecutor, but don't cut your gloves off, because the fight's not over. Justice will come to Ferguson.
Yeah, I find those comments of Al Sharpton to be utterly destructive, divisive, insightful in the sense of inciting. If you want justice, then justice may not be what you consider justice. In other words, if you want real justice and the evidence points a certain direction and ultimately someone is exonerated, then justice does not mean you get to lynch that person or you keep pushing until you convict that person unjustly. Sometimes you have to accept justice even when it doesn't go the way you like. And that is a big problem we're having now, that we get so inflamed that we do not sit back and say, okay, what are the deeper issues and how can we work together to bring about fruitful solutions? Michael Brown, yes, wading into the controversies. Again, it's immaterial to me whether the speaker is black or white or green or yellow or blue, whether he is male or she is female, whether the person is Jew or Gentile, American or foreign. Ultimately, the question is going to be truth. Ultimately, the question is going to be, for us following Jesus, how does this line up with Scripture? Here's what we're doing today on The Line of Fire, continuing a discussion we had yesterday, but really pressing for this. I want you to do your best to expose blind spots in me, something I may be missing as an American, as a male, as a white person, as a Jew, as a follower of Jesus, or whoever, whatever my background. As someone 59 years old, I want you to do your best to expose blind spots in me to help me to see the beam that's in my eye so I can help take the speck out of your eye. And conversely, I want to do that for you. I've written articles, numbers of articles. In fact, I'm looking at a stack, the George Zimmerman trial in black and white. I have a conversation between a black American and a white American. Starting here, once again, black American, an African American is deprived of justice. How many more times must this happen before things change? A black teenager on his way home from the store with Skittles is shot dead by an overzealous community watchdog. A jury with five white women and one Hispanic woman exonerates the killer so he can walk away scot-free. This is 21st century America. This is justice. Then I have a white response and back and forth. And I get real blunt here with each side speaking to the other. Why? Because I'm trying to lay out both points of view and say, okay, how can we hear each other and understand each other? My article, Ferguson Must Be Redeemed, came out last week. My first point was no verdict, no grand jury verdict could satisfy both sides. And second, there's enough evidence to support skepticism on both sides. And third, this is not about Ferguson. These are much bigger issues that are affecting the nation, and we need to find out why. Black caller last hour said to me that her initial reaction, just gut reaction, was that an injustice was done as if it was done to her. Then she looked at her white friends. They seemed indifferent. She lives in the suburbs. I said, those are big issues. Why did you immediately have that gut reaction? Is it based on truth or experience or just sense of solidarity? And as for your friends being indifferent, how is it that they don't understand there's a big wound in black America nationally? And that's what's coming to the surface here. In my five obvious lessons from Ferguson, I started by saying the racial divide in America remains wide and deep. My second point, much of white America still doesn't get it. And I conclude that by saying the fact is that black Americans have been victims of injustice much more than we realize. And then my third point was much of black America still doesn't get it. 866-34-TRUTH. We've got some great audio clips to play for you. And best of all, your calls as soon as we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So here's the question. Here's the question. 866-34-TRUTH. When I have a caller call yesterday, she's very upset with me. She used to listen a little bit, stopped listening, heard me again, and is didn't call me a racist, but was very blunt in telling me how wrong I was. And then when she said, look, my namesake Michael Brown was never convicted of a crime, I said, he's on video robbing a store and shoving the clerk. Well, he was never convicted. When someone calls, ultimately I had to cut her off because she just would not interact, was going to talk over me, would not interact in a civil way, so I had to cut the call off. When we're dealing with factual evidence, regardless of the color of the, regardless of any of that, and someone looks at factual evidence and is not willing to respond to truth, then how can that person call someone else biased or bigoted? That's a big question to me. If you could show me something in front of my eyes and I'm just going to deny reality, then what does that say about strongholds in my own mind? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's help each other today. And in a moment, after I get to as many calls as I can, I want to ask some larger questions for us to talk through together. Let's go to Richard in Thompson, Manitoba. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Hey. You're talking about racial issues on the show, and I believe I have a perfect scripture that's germane to the issue. It's in Acts 17, verses 22 through 28.
Yeah, I had a hunch you were going there. Uh-huh.
Yeah. It said, then Paul stood in the midst of Mars Hill and said, ye men of Athens, I perceive that in all things ye are too superstitious. For as I passed by and beheld your devotions, I found an altar with this inscription to the unknown God. Whom therefore ye ignorantly worship, him declare I unto you. God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things, and hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. So
right.
You see there that the Paul clearly says that God is made of one blood all nations of men, but also in one instance, I believe, in the book of Acts, an apostle baptized an Ethiopian eunuch. So there's one Jewish person who's baptizing another of another race.
Oh yeah. Well, not only that, you have the message going from Peter, a Jew, to Cornelius, an Italian, and then of course, since those centuries, you've had Gentiles leading Jews to the Lord, but you have Middle Eastern people baptizing African Americans and on and on. Yeah, one people made by God. So the racial distinctions are just colors of a rainbow in that respect. Yeah, always important to remember that from God's perspective in terms of one human race. When Joe Louis, the famous heavyweight boxer, was told he was a credit to his race, the black man, it was then said the human race, because someone of his character elevated the whole race. Let's go to Gloria in Boston, Massachusetts. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Oh, hi.
Hello.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yeah. I just was sitting and listening to everything that's going on, which is driving me nuts. It's really driving me crazy. But, you know, as, you know, the Bible says that sin is a reproach, and righteousness exalts a nation. So, I mean, it's like we talk about all this racism here and racism there, and everybody getting upset and mad and angry. But then they have to realize who the real enemy is. The real enemy is not color. Color has nothing to do with it because God does not see color.
Yeah, okay. The real enemy, yeah, I'm with you. So the real enemy
is Satan himself that gets in the minds and the hearts of people. And, you know, that's, and when they allow him to take over and he takes over and he starts, well, you have to see people for people, not for the color of their skin.
Yes, 100%, 100%.
Right, and the Bible also says in Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 14, he says, if my people which are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, he said, then will I hear from heaven and forgive your sins and heal the land. And if we want healing in our land, it's going to have to begin with us in the church.
Yes, 100% on all the points. Listen, we can get inflamed and then get out of the spirit. One of the things that I've said is, well, look, it could be a husband yelling at his kids in the house. You know, the kids are out of order, but once he starts yelling and screaming, now he's adding to the problem. It says in James, Jacob, the first chapter, that the anger of man does not accomplish the righteousness that God desires. There's a righteous anger, but most of the time we get worked up in the flesh, and then we start yelling at each other. We don't listen to each other. We get out of the spirit. We can't even pray. So what we all have to do is measure our words to help each one involved on all sides of the issue to calm down and to go before God, and then let the passion out, then let the desire for justice out, then let the repentance out. You're absolutely right. It's a spiritual battle ultimately. Of course, it plays out in society, but it's ultimately a spiritual battle, and the church must lead the way. And here's what concerns me. You have fine church leaders, fine men and women of God. You have fine black leaders, fine white leaders, fine Hispanic leaders, Asian leaders, others. And yet the main voices that we hear are voices that are just inciting people to anger. We have voices that are just provoking people to get angry, and it's not fair and it's not right, as opposed to say, justice ultimately belongs to God. Let's work together now to bring about justice. Let's listen to each other. So, yeah, the getting people worked up in the flesh only hurts, never helps. Appreciate the call. And Gloria, may there be peace and grace in your own heart because you have the answer that people need. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll stay in Boston. Taylor, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about the case in Ferguson. My thought is that I don't think that the officer purposely killed Michael Brown in the scuffle that they had. At the same time, I feel from what I see and heard over the years, white officers tend to result to killing the black person. They don't regularly kill a white person in the same circumstance. They'll struggle more with the white person before using their gun on them than with the black person. So the white person is given more opportunity to be subdued physically than with a lethal weapon. I believe that white officers in certain areas throughout the world, throughout America, rather, have the same mentality as the white officers back during and before the civil rights movement, to put a black person down like a dog or an animal. I know you have been asking people to get a better case that they can, pilot, in terms of a black person who was, innocently killed or whatever in a situation. What about the incident in New York with the young black male, DJ Henry? He was from Massachusetts, and he was in New York picking someone up or meeting someone at a club or something like that, and the officer shot and killed him because they thought that he was trying to use his vehicle to hurt him. I think that that's a great incident because that person, I didn't know him personally. His but I, from the case I remember, he wasn't trying to do that at all, and that's what resulted in. He was killed. He was a young, educated person, and he was killed.
Actually, Taylor, I believe there are quite a few cases that could be used. In other words, that's the problem, that when you have the national rallying and the Al Sharptons and others provoking things further, it's around the wrong case. Yeah, 100% with you, Taylor. There are tragically other cases like that. And I don't doubt that in certain parts of the country, you have racist cops. They're human beings and they're flawed. And I'm not excusing. I'm just saying I don't doubt it exists. The only thing from my study, according to what I've read, twice as many whites are killed by police every year than blacks. Just what I've read, because I've been studying this as well. Can't verify that 100%, but that's what I've read. Thank you, Taylor, very much for the call.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. All right, I want to take a couple more calls on this and switch to a larger question. 866-34-TRUTH. As we discuss blind spots, as we discuss things that we may each be missing, I had said some months ago that it appears to me that a blind spot of white Americans is that we don't see racism when it is there. And a blind spot of black Americans is that they do see racism when it isn't there. 866-34-TRUTH. So I'm asking honestly, in the spirit of what Jesus said in Matthew 7, that we have to remove the beam from our own eye before we can take the speck out of someone else's eye. What are we each missing? When I say each, I mean I'm speaking, you're listening, you come on the air and you speak. I'm not saying black versus whites or male versus female. I'm just saying in general, what are we missing? Where might we have blind spots? Where do I have a blind spot on these issues? And let me just put out a larger topic issue, and then we'll come back to your calls. 866-34-TRUTH. There's an article by David Horowitz and John Perrazzo, 2012. Is it by them? Okay, it appears to be 2012. How the Welfare State Has Devastated African Americans. It's discoverthenetworks.org, A Guide to the Political Left. And the authors say this: the rise of the welfare state in the 1960s contributed greatly to the demise of the black family as a stable institution. The out-of-wedlock birth rate among African Americans today is 73%, three times higher than it was prior to the war on poverty. Children raised in fatherless homes are far more likely to grow up poor and to eventually engage in criminal behavior than their peers who were raised in two-parent homes. In 2010, blacks, approximately 13% of the U.S. population, accounted for 48.7% of all arrests for homicide, 31.8% of arrests for forcible rape, 33.5% of arrests for aggravated assault, and 55% of arrests for robbery. Also, as of 2010, the black poverty rate was 27.4%, about three times higher than the white rate, meaning that 11.5 million blacks in the U.S. were living in poverty. And the authors of this article are saying that it's the welfare state that terribly contributed to this. And my larger question is, since we recognize that these problems exist, how do we come together as followers of Jesus in a holistic way so that we can address these problems? Because they're bigger than police brutality. Wherever it exists, must be exposed. They're bigger problems than injustice in the courts. Whatever, wherever those exist, those need to be addressed. But how do we address the larger issues as the people of God? How do we address the deterioration of the family? How much is the government's fault for the welfare state and the entitlement mentality? Because that's often how we think justice comes. How do we try to work together to fix the larger problems of fatherlessness? Please hear me. I'm saying this as an advocate, as someone wanting to help, not as someone pointing a finger. I saw a YouTube by a black gentleman, don't know who he was, but talking really straight to fellow black Americans, basically saying, you got no one to blame but yourself, and you don't want to be in this city, get out of there. You don't want to be in the hood, get out of there. I just want to say, although I resonated with much of what he said in terms of personal responsibility, I was troubled in that not always easy to just turn your life around when you've been raised in a certain environment, or where you've just had a lot of criminality around you, or you don't, or your dad's in jail and your stepdad's in jail. I don't know that it's just so easy to say, okay, I'm just going to turn around, especially without God's supernatural help. What can we do as God's people together to try to address these larger issues? To the phones in Richmond, Virginia, Craig, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
Good, good. You know, this is a very, very, very tense issue that's touched our nation, and it's not just this. I think it's just a culmination of a series of events that have just led to this attitude and this pervasive spirit that's upon us now. But I think right now what we're missing, I think, is the opportunity to sit down and dialogue and try to move forward from this. Nothing that we do now is going to bring your namesake, Michael Brown, back. You know, nothing's going to change that. But we've got to get to the point where we have an understanding of each other. And I think one of the things that our white brothers and sisters can do is just stop and remember what it was like for you all when O.J. Simpson was exonerated. You know, everybody just felt like that was the worst thing in the world. And it went on and on and on and on. Understand that our attitude is similar to that now. You know, we still feel like there's a lot of things that happened. There was some injustice. We understand that the prosecutor said there was not sufficient evidence. Not sufficient doesn't mean none, you know. And I think that sometimes we have to just sit down and look at the whole picture. And yes, I agree with what you said about the black gentleman on YouTube saying that there's some things that we as African Americans can do differently. And one of the things that I hope all of us hear is that it's time for us to do something besides be angry. We have to become more productive. We have to become more proactive in our own communities as far as teaching our children that you don't have the right just to lash out because you're mad. You know, and white Americans need to understand that too, simply because there are people who said things to our sitting president that are just not acceptable. Someone calling him a liar, someone calling him criminal, somebody calling him deceitful and all those types of things. These things are just not acceptable. And what I'm saying is, if you're going to say it to one group, then it needs to hold true for everyone. Yeah. I'm simply saying healing has to come by sitting down and having dialogue. We're talking about trying to blur lines between races. Well, we shouldn't blur lines. We should respect lines. I'm never going to be a white American. You're never going to be a black American. There's a uniqueness that we all have, and we should learn how to cherish and appreciate that as opposed to always misunderstanding that. So there has to be work done on both sides to bridge these things in order to come to a solution that's going to be workable for everybody.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, Craig, and especially the point that white Americans, even if they believe that the grand jury was correct, and even if, like me, I say if you're going to draw attention to injustice, let's find a better case to highlight. Tragically, there are quite a few of those. At least understand why there is the pain, why there is that outrage. And yes, the O.J. trial is a great example because white America was shocked, like the guy's totally guilty. How could anyone deny that? And how could anyone question that? And when I looked at it, I thought, okay, the evidence seems absolutely clear to me. So I want to find out. I remember I was talking to a missionary friend, a black friend of mine in Italy, and he was telling me, he said the evidence against O.J. was so weak. And he's a sharp guy. He loves the Lord. And I thought, man, how could you possibly think that? But I know you love the Lord, and I know you're a thinking individual. So that meant, okay, time to have a conversation. And yet we should celebrate our diversity. That's the beauty of the body. And you know what's interesting? I've had black callers say no president's ever been treated the way President Obama's treated. Then I mentioned what was done to President Bush, and they impeached Bush and lynched Bush, and Bush should be killed. It's like, yeah, we need to recognize these on all sides. Thank you, sir, for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. Please check out this week's special resource offer. You don't want to miss it. AskDrBrown.org, askdrbrown.org, right on the homepage. Watch the video, all right?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Was this a colorblind crime?
No, it wasn't a colorblind crime, and it's something that's happening all over the nation. We have this epidemic of black young teenagers that are having mob violence, mob activities from Washington, D.C., out to Denver, over in the South as well. And it's partly a part of the perfect storm of, I believe, of entitlement, dependency, political correctness, and this whole ideal of white guilt, where we're afraid to identify who it is that attack and the reasons why they're doing it. And it's come to Milwaukee, and I believe it's the beginning of a long, hot summer.
That was from a few years back on the Charlie Sykes show, and you heard James T. Harris. He is a black host, News Radio 620 WTMJ, I believe that's where he hosts things. In any case, this is a black American saying these things. Clip number 5, played in the first hour. I want to repeat it. Black radio host Jesse Lee Peterson, and he's interviewing an award-winning Washington Post reporter, Colin Flaherty, who had written about black-on-white violence. Now, I'm bringing all this up for a reason, a strategic reason. Clip number 5.
I've been saying for years that white Americans need to get over the fear of being called racist and this false guilt about what's wrong with black people, that most blacks are suffering not because of racism from white folks, but the lack of moral character, and that black people have been encouraged to hate whites and discriminate against them from the so-called civil rights leaders and others, and that this is evil, and evil get worse from generation to generation if you don't deal with it. It's out of control.
All right, so if we are going to address systemic racism that exists in white America towards blacks, then we must address systemic racism in black America towards whites or other groups. If we are going to put cards on the table, we need to do them with equal candor, listening and learning. And let me say this again, 866-34-TRUTH, and I'm going straight to your calls. Let me say this again. Let me say this first before I say what I was going to say. Whenever we brought up these topics, our phones have been jammed for 2 hours. Our phones have been jammed, and I have learned so much listening to you, my listeners. I have learned so much in terms of deepening perspective or exposing blind spots in my own thinking. And I turn around and share those with others, and that informs what I write, and that informs how I think. Because all of us are learning and all of us are growing, and none of us have complete, perfect experience in life, in ministry, in anything. So I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for calling, especially those who say, you know, I differ with you, but I respect you, and I want to tell you why I differ. That means the world to me. That's how we make progress. That's how we make progress. But the smaller point I want to make is this. When we do not realize why one group of people is in pain, then we are clearly missing something important. If, to give you an example, I've used similar examples many times. If I see you in the hallway, pat you on the shoulder, hey man, good to see you, and you scream, and I think, what are you screaming for, man? I barely even touch. How dare you scream? As opposed to saying, oh, is there something wrong with your shoulder? Yeah, man, I just had shoulder surgery. Didn't you know? No, I had no idea. I wouldn't have patted you on that shoulder. When I deal with issues having to do with homosexuality, now, of course, I'm called a bigot and hate monger and Nazi and all these other things. I expect that. I understand that that's going to happen the moment you raise these things. But some of you say, why do you go out of your way to be gentle with people? Why are you so sensitive in these issues? Because I realize that many of those who identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender have been abused, have been rejected, have suffered a lot. And when I just, to use the analogy, pat them on the shoulder, they may scream, even though I was gentle. The fact that so many black Americans are hurting over the events in Ferguson, no, it doesn't mean that that's the right poster boy for this. And it doesn't mean that justice was not done. But what it does mean is there is a lot of pain that many white Americans don't understand. I want to understand it, and I want to try to address the larger issues involved in the equation.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire as we talk about honestly exposing blind spots that we may have, honestly speaking through issues that we might be missing so that we can help address larger problems. The big issue for me is how do we as the church together, how do we as Americans together help strengthen black families, help strengthen motherhood and fatherhood, help strengthen education for black Americans. You say, hey, everybody's the same. Everybody can make their way to the top if they want. Look, we have a black president. We've had a black attorney general, black secretary of state. We've got black justices, etc. Anybody can move forward. Well, not everybody can move forward that easily because many times there are too many social obstacles along the way, and many people are not going to make it forward, and they'll never make it to Yale or Harvard or to the big leagues, so to say. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Salt Lake City, Utah. John, you're on the air. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, thanks, Dr. Brown. You kind of depressed me there, gave me a little depression there when you was talking about our society, because it is falling apart. And this thing in Ferguson, you get the grand jury, and they still are having these protests. And then most of the protests, they went after people's property that weren't even involved in the issue. Like Dr. Ben Carson said, President Bush, when he was, President Obama, was on the television talking about no violence. They were already involved in the violence, and Dr. Carson said he should have said stop. I grew up in a neighborhood, there was mostly minorities, okay? The white person was acting like a Mexican or a black guy, all right? So I know when somebody's a racist or not. Okay, I thought by Obama becoming a president that we would come together, blacks, minorities, or whatever. But I noticed that it was split. There was a it tore people, and blacks were blacks, whites were whites, and it just changed. I just want to say that you got to trust the justice system, and that's all we have in America. I'm a certified paralegal. I know there's bad things that happen. I've had racism put on me when I was younger. It's how you deal with it. What do? You move on. That's all you can do. I'm a Christian. I pray. I let God handle it. Before I was a Christian, I handled it.
Yeah.
Get me nowhere.
John, I appreciate the call and the perspective. And hey, don't be depressed because Jesus is Lord. And to me, this painful situation is a great opportunity to be redemptive. And thank you for the call. That's why I wrote last week. If you didn't read it, read my article, Ferguson Must Be Redeemed. Just go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article. Some of what I said was this. If the shooting of Michael Brown, my namesake, was an isolated incident, then the protest would make no sense, but it is not. It points to a much larger national issue, one that runs deep in the psyche of black America. So even if white Americans can point to the epidemic of black-on-black crime as well as to white youths being killed by blacks or to white police being killed by blacks, those statistics will not remove the deep convictions of many African Americans who knew by experience that they are more likely to be racially profiled and suspected by police than white Americans. I go on to say the Ferguson tragedy must be redeemed, okay, I can prove my point, you can prove your point, as if we have different points. What does that accomplish? What does that accomplish? Wouldn't it be better to ask someone who differs with you why they believe their perspective is right? Is it so dangerous to hear someone out even when you're convinced that they're wrong? So if there are real issues in the justice system, if there are real issues with police brutality, then together we must do our best to address those issues prayerfully, respectfully, and in public ways that are righteous. Sure. But again, that's a part of a much, 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 much bigger problem. The bigger, bigger problem is the state of the black American family. I say that in sympathy and support, not an accusation. The question is, how can we work together as followers of Jesus to understand the issues, to try to fix the issues. The one thing seems evident to me is that the welfare system is not helping. Oh, I don't mean no welfare for anybody. If you don't work, you die. Not everyone's able to. I understand that. But I'm saying the system seems to have done more harm than good. We go to Dallas, Texas. David, welcome to the Line of Fire.
How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you.
All right. Well, so basically, real quick, I kind of, you were already talking about the topic when I got on. So my question is it in general, like, plank eye topic and just, like, for, like, the whole reality and what we could talk about, or is it just based in basically Ferguson?
Well, if it's related to the larger issues, issues of justice, issues of racial disparity, those things, sure. It's not, you know, the sky's the limit. You can talk about Martians invading Peru, okay? But as long as it's on target with these larger things, and especially to help each other get better perspectives. Yep, go ahead.
All right, cool. Yeah, no, so basically in a nutshell, I guess I can apply this to two separate groups of people. And more or less, I think that as a whole, like, we need to understand, like in this place that, like, love is love and good is good and bad is bad and negative is negative. And, like, our emotions, like, when we're going to be acting in negative ways, we're only putting negativity into an already negative situation. And I think that, like, what one should do in this place if they're looking for change because of this is to find a place in their heart when they're going to ask God to give them the love to produce good out of this, and really out of that love, they're really going to be able to heap the coals on the evil and on the bad in this place by doing good and by loving in this situation, and in that showing Christ-likeness and showing that the really the image that we need to look for and the truth we need to find is found in Christ. And when someone has found their life and their truth in Christ, like, these issues aren't going to come about. But also then relating to this issue, I think we need to see from, like you're saying, a transparent point of view. And from that transparent point of view, we need to find the truth here, and we need to look for answers which collectively will solve the issues and heal the wounds of others. And I think actually that good is being done with Obama ordering the cameras, which both can help cops when they tell their testimonies, and both could help a victim if they were to be victimized by a cop and tell their testimony. So I think really good is being done here. And I think that it actually can be used through love as something for people to really, like, come together and yes, debate, but debate and speak the truth in love and grow up together within Christ in it. If these people are indeed, or if the people talking are obviously in Christ. And I guess the last thing I kind of want to bring up was, I think more recently I've recognized that the church as a whole has kind of bypassed like the conversation about love and has went to deeper theology. And I think that us as a church need to focus on the nature of God and how we, through Christ in us, can really, by seeking God, like, dumb down the gospel to really a place of, like, just having a supernatural love. Because, I mean, I've been in ministry before, and the one thing which, above all other things, whether it be a healing, whether it be anything, that speaks to someone is when they can see, like, the love of God in you, and they can see the love and the light in your eyes, you know, and that's life-changing. So,
yeah, David, I deeply appreciate what you're saying. You know, the way of the cross is always the way of death to the flesh, and there is a human anger. I've been playing some clips from Al Sharpton. I'll play one more that I said are unhelpful and destructive. I don't care the color of anyone's skin or the context in terms of how many people were there of the same color or not. The issue is there are things that incite anger. There are things that incite fury. And there are things that incite a heart for justice and righteousness. And often there is that saying no to the flesh. There is that saying, no, okay, I'm not going to try to hurt this person that hurt me. And all that's going to do is add injustice to injustice. And as for the love of God, yeah, there is a supernatural love that God gives us that transcends so many things, and it enables us to love our neighbor as ourselves. It gives us an empathy that's very costly. Love is very costly. The only thing I'd add in, David, is just one caveat, which is that love and justice, love and truth go hand in hand. There is the mentality today that says, hey, love is love, and therefore any two people that want to be together, love is love, and that often doesn't recognize that there are other issues of truth and righteousness that go hand in hand. But yes, what concerns me is that the voices that are approaching this righteously, the church leaders, I'm sure right in Ferguson, that are approaching this righteously and in a spiritual way, those that are doing it nationally, they're not the ones that we're primarily hearing. And sadly, if there wasn't so much arson and looting and other criminal behavior, regardless of the color of the skin of those involved, whether it be white, black, or something else, we wouldn't be focusing on this as much, which is a shame. What we need to do is really recognize where righteousness and justice are lacking and then say, how can we be agents of positive change? Thank you, sir. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Again, I am determined to be as redemptive as I can, wade into the controversies together. And thank you, so many of you writing to me, contacting me to thank me and thank our team for what we're doing together. It's a joy because this is the only way we make progress. It's risky, but it's worth it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Durham, North Carolina. Harris, welcome to the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Yes, we do appreciate you. And again, thank God for you and all that you're doing. But I wanted to pose one question, and that was, I know you was talking about the overwhelming evidence. Well, they said that the forensic expert, can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, let me just clarify one thing. I've said the evidence is ambiguous.
You did say that. And I hear you. I listen to you every day.
Oh, well, thank you.
So, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And, you know, I think you're a very anointed man of God. But, you know, some, like I said, we have the right to agree and disagree. But the forensic evidence, the forensic expert himself is questionable. He himself was a fraud. And they have been investigating this man, and they did all kinds of specials on the same person that handled the case and how the body laid out there 4 hours in the ground. Now, I know from personal experience the Rodney King case where, a white, let's say a Good Samaritan, film Rodney King being beat. I also report to you that I was beat like Rodney King. I also, justice wants slack. I want to use the scripture, Habakkuk, where it says where it says that the law goes lacking. Well, I know from experience several cases I've had, but I still believe in love. I still believe in promoting love. I believe God is love. I believe in strengthening the African-American community. But yet still, like I said, the sensitivity when it comes to it, like, I have a business that I do, and one of them is a moving company. And like I said, I got the star David all over my moving company. When I go to a lot of...
Hang on. I just got to jump in 1 second, sir. I just want to be fair to other callers. I think we spoke yesterday, and I just have to be fair to my callers. So we definitely talked yesterday. So... give me a call in a couple of weeks. We can continue the conversation. I got to be fair. We do have our rules about folks coming on the air, all right? And I know that we ask that question specifically when folks do call. So just being fair and righteous, brother, I hope you appreciate that and look forward to hearing from you, all right? 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Raleigh, North Carolina. Carol, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, Dr. Brown. I guess I have a little bit different perspective rather than looking at this from the race. I was looking at it as an authority issue, which is really problematic with young people today. I guess, well, every generation has that. But, and I was thinking of the scripture from Romans 13, where it says, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. So I just felt like that day, anyway, Michael Brown seemed to be on a roll with doing whatever he felt like doing as far as the clerk and taking what he wanted and then the middle of the street. And so I just wonder what would have happened if he just would have listened to the police officer.
Oh, no. Well, listen, the first thing is if he didn't commit the robbery, he would have been more likely to listen to a police officer. That's number one. And number two, of course, he'd be alive and there'd be no, we wouldn't know his name today. We wouldn't know about the situation at all. There are big authority issues. And look, there are plenty of kids, black, white, other races that are disrespectful to authority. Whatever we do to contribute to a negative view towards authority is negative. So you're right. It's not a race issue. It's an authority issue in that respect. And you say, yeah, but you don't know what some of these kids put up with the police. Doesn't matter. You still respect authority. And if there's injustice, then you fight for justice. But if we don't respect authority, if I speak words here, I differ with many things that are done in churches. I'm a leader within in the body and serve within the body and served in local churches in different capacities for many years. But when I differ respectfully so that we do not disrespect authority, because whatever we do to cultivate a disrespect for authority hurts people rather than helps people. If an authority tells me you cannot read the Bible, a government authority, I don't say, you jerk, you fool, who cares about, I say, with all respect to your office, I must disobey you to obey God. Always respect for authority, especially when they're asking us to abide by the law. You're absolutely right. Appreciate it. We got time for one more call. Anthony. All right. Then let's go to Ephraim in Gastonia. You have the honor of being the last caller today. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Jay?
Jay? Can't say. I'm not Jay. I am Mike.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine. Thanks.
Good. Good. I just wanted to kind of address the fact of what I feel like the whole situation of this thing is in Ferguson, you know, which to me, as an African-American, Christian African-American male in this country, it's all about race and it's all about racism. But the issues are just, you know, have never really been addressed from the time that it started to be addressed, you know, from civil rights coming to the forefront in this country all the way to the end of black awareness, you know, for lack of a better words for saying. So when you think about it as a person, and when you look at a situation like this as an African-American, and then when you throw your Christianity in there, it gets very, very cloudy, confusing, and you, it really drives me, you know, to Jesus, because I know that Jesus is the only one that can bring about, in the midst of confusion, any kind of peace, you know. But everybody's not there. No, everybody's not a Christian. Everybody's not saying Jesus is Lord. You know, even among Christians, you still got racism. Among Christians, you had it, you know, in the word with the Jews and the Samaritans or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I'm just jumping in, sir, because I'm out of time. I wanted to get one last call in. So yeah, here's what we have to do, though, at the very least, because we are both followers of Jesus, and we at least have to be able to sit down together, learn from each other, hear what the issues are, and try to work together on a deeper level to address the real injustices and problems that do exist. I'm committed to it. I thank you, my dear listening audience. Thank you, Ephraim, for being committed to this. We're going to continue walking through these things. We're going to learn from each other, and we're going to move forward to advance the gospel together. Be sure to stop by the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Check on the special resource offer. You'll want to. You'll be blessed by it. My bottom line today, God is a God of justice. And if we want to have the heart of God, then we must share his heart in pursuing justice.